You're listening to Colch and Arrow Chat, the only weekly English language podcast discussing Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colch and Arrow Chat is La Liga journalist Ewan McTeer. Ewan McTeer is the guest on this edition of Colch and Arrow Chat. Ewan joins me to discuss Atletico's latest preseason friendly, a 3-2 win at Brighton. An entertaining game. We'll discuss the highlights and lowlights of that one, including Nico Gaitán scoring two goals, one of them for Atletico, Fernando Torres continuing his impressive preseason run, and whether or not you should be worried about Atletico's defense entering the new season. Plus, we'll talk about the latest transfer activity, including the now-confirmed sales of Matias Krenovitter and Rafael Santos Borre, and the latest surrounding the situations of Diego Costa and Jan Oblak. Before we get started, you can like Into the Calderon on Facebook at facebook.com/intothecalderon, and you can subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colch and Arrow Chat on your podcasting platform of choice: iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. We'll be right back with Ewan McTeer after this.
Very quiet at the moment, but I think just everyone waiting for the season to start. Yeah. Itching for it now. It's especially in a non-World Cup, non-Euros year. It's been nice to have a long summer, but it's getting to that point where I think I'm ready to go again.
Yeah, exactly. This preseason has felt very long to me. You know,
I think so.
Yeah. Like, I was, like, done after the Audi Cup, pretty much. I was, like, I was ready to start the season. I don't care about these last two friendlies. I just don't.
Especially when the Audi Cup's, you know, like, two games in 2 days, and it's two, like, you know, Napoli and Liverpool, two really cool games, and then you've got Brighton and, you know, the kind of couple ones around La Liga and stuff, just waiting for it to all go, and you think, great, okay, we're ready now. Yeah. Everybody's ready.
Like, let's go. We got the fixtures out. Let's do it, you know?
Exactly. I suppose you need to qualify for a Super Cup. That's maybe it.
Yeah, it is what it is. So yeah. Let's start with the Brighton game, and this was continuing the very entertaining Atletico preseason. I think it's been kind of entertaining, more so than usual, because back in Munich you had that game against Napoli, which was really kind of wild at the end with Godin getting the red card. You had the game against Liverpool, which went to penalties, and Atletico eventually coming out on top. This game was pretty much back and forth, especially in the second half. What did you see from the Brighton game that you liked from an Atletico perspective?
From an Atletico perspective, I liked how they seemed to care about it as well. You know, like we say, after the Audi Cup, which, you know, is just a preseason tournament, but it's one of the more prestigious ones, to come just a few days after winning that to then have a friendly against Brighton. I was quite impressed with the intensity from the players. They still seemed to care, even though this was, you know, one of the least attractive preseason games that they're going to play all summer. They still started it with quite a lot of energy, and yeah, they seemed to want to win it, and obviously it turned out well.
Yeah, the desire has been there all preseason. Even in the game against Toluca, the opening game in Mexico, which was, you know, played at elevation, and it was really kind of a struggle for the entire 90 minutes, but Atletico did have that desire and that intensity, which is really good to see, especially with the unique circumstances entering this season with the registration ban, with the, you know, no new players until January. It's important to get everyone, you know, locked in from the go, and it seems like Simeone has placed an emphasis on that, getting everyone ready, you know, right on time to start this season. Yeah, but yeah, I agree with you. The enthusiasm and the intensity were both there, especially the second half. That was just a really kind of crazy second half. Yeah. Atletico's attack, really, really good. Nico Gaitán scored the opener in the first half when, Matty Ryan should have had that one. Yeah,
yeah, he should have. But he played well. He played well up to that point. He made quite a few good saves, and then he let in the, you know, probably the easiest shot he'd faced until that point.
He made his first really good save was the one on Griezmann from that free kick. Excellent save. But this one with Gaitán, I think he's going to want that one back. Just one of those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just a little bit of the rustiness, I guess.
Yeah, you can't let
that go. I mean, it was, you know, you take every goal that comes, even in pre-season, and like you say, the attack looked good, but once again, the defence really, really didn't. And once again, you know, apart from the Toluca game in Mexico, another non-clean sheet from Atletico, which is which I guess was a problem at points during the competitive games last season, especially in the first half of the season. So to see that in pre-season against, you know, these are all mostly teams that they should be beaten, and they have been winning these games, but to be doing so, conceding goals isn't very Atletico-like.
Yeah, let's talk about the defense, because Robbie wrote a column on it earlier this week about how Atletico's defense is maybe more fragile than ever entering the season, at least under Simeone. In this game, Brighton's opening goal was a deflection off Gaetan's right boot from a free kick. That's just one of those goals. And then Brighton's second goal came after, I can't remember who crossed it, but Juanfran got juked out of his shoes. I'm sorry, I have to say it. I know how much you love Juanfran. But he got completely just juked, and cross came in, pretty powerful header, beat Oblak. How concerned are you, even though it's just the preseason?
I think the biggest concern is how well Oblak has been playing in preseason as well, because if it wasn't for Oblak, it could be even worse. You know, they have conceded in each of the last three games, but, you know, they've only conceded the goals that they have because Oblak has made quite a few tremendous saves, especially now the cup. Some of those stops that he made in Munich were really impressive, and it just shows you how many shots on target Atletico are giving up.
Yeah.
You know, against not the best opposition, when you start doing that in La Liga or the Champions League, then you know, there's only so much Oblak can do. So that's troubling. But I guess that's what preseason is for, to sort of, you know, experiment with new personnel in there. And, you know, defense is maybe one of the areas of the pitch which take a little bit of time to sort of, you know, remember all your positioning and your structure. Whereas, you know, the likes of Griezmann and Torres, you know, in attack, you know, you can sort of pick off after a few months on the sofa and still go forward, still go and score goals if you have that talent. But to immediately be well structured and well organised, that takes a bit of time. So I'm sure Simeone will have them a little bit more organised by the start of the season. But it's definitely more worrying than in previous years.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I have to balance that with it's preseason, and you know, there have been some, you know, Liverpool and Napoli are no slouch. Those are two teams that are both they both could be at the group stage of the Champions League. Those are two very good teams, and the goals that Atletico have conceded this preseason came on that Callejon stunner, the Firmino penalty, that deflection from Gaetan, and then that cross from that header I just talked about. That was a goal probably should have been handled more easily from that defense, but there's only one or two goals that Atletico have conceded that make me say, okay, wow, they really should have stopped that. So I don't know, maybe that's encouraging in that Atleti haven't been there have been some times where Atletico defensively have conceded too many good opportunities, but not part of it is Oblak's been really good, but not a lot of these opportunities are going in. So I think that's encouraging, that the goals Atletico are conceding aren't ones you want to have back.
Yeah, exactly. There's not been any completely calamitous, moments of defending, but the conceding of, you know, a couple of penalties in the Audi Cup, I find that quite worrying, because last season, maybe for the first time in a few seasons, Atletico conceded a lot of penalties which lost in big games. Penalties that were sort of needless. I remember the Real Sociedad game where they, away from home, when they conceded two really needless penalties, and just clumsy, just a little bit of panic, and for them to be conceding similar sort of penalties, similar kind of panic in the boxes in games that, you know, there isn't that much to lose is a little bit of a worry. But yeah, like you say, there's been some good goals, like Kaihon won as well, to go in, and, you know, some of these are just a little bit unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this season Atleti may concede more anyway, because they're going to play faster. I think you're going to have, at the back, I don't think Godin and Savic can play a whole lot together anymore, because neither one of them has any pace. So, and you're going to be playing faster, which means there are going to be opportunities both ways. So Jimenez or Lucas, in my opinion, is going to have to be starting next to Godin just to make up for the lack of pace that Godin has at this point in his career.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Savic and Godin, the two of them together, like you say, that's for certain games, that's just not going to work. But again, having Jimenez in there, you're certainly going to have the pace, but I don't think having Jimenez in there is going to solve the penalty conceding problem by any means. But he offers you something different.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. So how about Fernando Torres? Scored another goal in this game. He's having an excellent preseason, and there doesn't seem to be much concern about him entering the new season, which I was concerned because he's going to be starting up through December. But so far, so good. Scored a nice header from Juan Fran Cross.
Yeah, I mean, to not be able to sign any players with Gamero being injured, you know, to have to rely on Torres up front is, I think, based on some of the very quiet performances he had last season, that was a big concern. But yeah, for him to be shown he's still got that killer touch, and you know, there were some wonderful goals he scored last season. He showed he still has that touch, and if Griezmann can just sort of work it, because I think Torres and Griezmann have never really had that connection that Griezmann sometimes has with Gamero. They seem to develop a good partnership quite quickly on, but I don't think Griezmann and Torres have ever really had that same understanding, always being on the same page. But if Torres is going to have a run in the side with them two up front, week in, week out for the start of the season, then you hope they can complement each other, and maybe it's not as big a concern as it first seemed.
Yeah, and we have a question on the strike partnership from Baba Memo at MemiMemo0404. Who should partner Griezmann in attack till Costa hopefully arrives? In his opinion, Gamero should be sold with Vieto and Correa staying. That's an interesting one to me.
Yeah, I think, like I say, I really like the partnership that Gamero and Griezmann formed last season. And although Gamero maybe didn't score the number of goals that we thought he would, the number of assists that he was able to give to Griezmann was a lot more than I expected. And it seemed that, you know, at times Gamero was almost sacrificing his goals tally to help Griezmann out, and he made Griezmann better. Whereas when Torres played, I think, you know, I don't think there were any games where you could really say Torres made Griezmann a better player. So I think Gamero can really, you know, get the best out of Griezmann, but on the other hand, I think Griezmann could get the best out of Torres. And if Torres plays like he has been the last few games in pre-season, then I don't think there's anything to worry about. But it's nice to have both options. I think, Simeone used them quite well midpoint of last season. You know, one of them would, whoever was in the best form would get the first hour of the game, and if they hadn't scored by the hour mark, then they'd be taken off, and the other one would get a half-hour run-out. And I think that was that worked quite well, because it kept them both on their toes, and they both knew that they had to produce each week if they wanted to start the next game.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I'm actually pretty okay with Gamero staying, because there have been the links earlier this summer that he would go to England, he could go back to France. Gamero off the bench, I think, is a very dangerous option. Now, he didn't live up to his price tag last season, but that's not entirely his fault. I mean, there were times when Gamero was really good, and the Gamero-Griezmann partnership was really, really good. My concerns with it are Gamero's durability, and Gamero and Griezmann kind of are similar profiles of players. Torres and Griezmann, I think, work well together, because Torres plays a very different style at this point in his career than Griezmann does. Griezmann and Gamero have pretty similar profiles, pretty similar styles of play, and that sometimes got in the way of Atletico's attack really humming. But when it worked, especially with Carrasco earlier in the season, when that worked, it was spellbinding to watch. Gamero has, I think, a lot of value off the bench, especially if Torres does start and you play him an hour and he doesn't score, you throw on Gamero and his speed can really unlock a defense in a tight game.
Yeah, especially once the opposition is a little bit tired. I mean, we saw that in the Sporting Gijón game where he got that hat-trick. And, you know, he just, you know, Sporting were sort of, you know, over the first half and the first half of the second half, they were just bit by bit worn down and down and down. And then Simeone throws on Gamero when they were all shattered, and he just, you know, he just runs riot. So I think to have him on the bench for some of these games is a great option to have, especially when selling him now. I mean, I don't even know if you would recoup half of his price tag. So there's not too much value to be gained from letting him go. And what he can give you from the bench is priceless, considering that Atletico can't replace him at least until January.
Yep, and that's why, again, I really have no problem with him staying. In fact, it's really good that he stays. It gives Chilo more flexibility that he hasn't really had in past seasons, because the other strikers were so bad. But I guess considering the options, I wasn't good with it earlier this year, but now I guess I would be okay with Torres starting, considering the options available at this time. Because worst case is he doesn't play well for an hour, you throw on Gamero or Correa, and you switch up the formation, and those guys with their speed and their pace can just create better opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of where I'm at with that. Also from the Brighton game, Cholo praised Nico Gaitán quite a bit after the game. Said it was great to see him score the goal. It seems like Cholo is maybe not going to rely on Gaitán, but he believes he has a role to play, and it could be a big role. What do you think of that? Because I'm not nearly as convinced after the Gaitán I watched last season.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by Cholo's relationship with Gaitán, because I think Gaitán is one of the few players where he's really, you know, criticized him in public, says he has to work harder, and you rarely hear that from Simeone, partly because most of the players probably don't need told that. But I found it interesting the points last season when he sort of, you know, very publicly set goals for Gaitán in the middle of press conferences and in interviews, and he would talk about how he had so much hope for Gaitán, but that he had to work harder, he had to take advantage of his opportunity. So for him to praise Gaitán, I think it's just the latest sort of phase in this relationship, where I think Simeone really loves what he sees from Gaitán in glimpses. I think he knows that he has the potential to be a really great player, but I think at times Simeone just gets a little bit frustrated that he doesn't always unlock that potential. So for him to be praising Gaitán, he's obviously trying to encourage him ahead of the new season. He obviously knows that he has something to give, and I think it's just a fascinating sort of psychological, you know, carrot and stick for dangling it in front of Gaitán to try and get the best out of him. Because again, without being able to sign players before January, he's going to have to rely on Gaitán for some games, especially some of the sort of against the weaker teams where he's going to want to rotate every now and then. And you know, Gaitán is really going to have to step up, which he did a little bit in the Copa del Rey run last season. So he's got it within him, but yeah, like you say, sometimes he just fails to convince me. But there's obviously something there that Simeone recognises and is desperate to sort of squeeze out.
Yeah, it is interesting, because like you said, last season Cholo more than once criticised his work rate, criticised why he wouldn't track back, and wondered out loud why this player would not track back, because it's so important in this system to do that. But he is going to have a role to play, especially before Vitolo's arrival in January. Cholo is going to have to rotate more. He's not going to have a choice. I've talked about this on the pod before. Considering the circumstances of this summer, and considering it looks like it's going to be another small squad again, as we'll talk about with the latest transfer activity, but Simeone is going to have to rely more on players like Gaitán and Tomás and Jiménez. He's going to have to rely on this second unit a lot more. And hopefully Gaitán repays that faith. And he has played pretty well this preseason. I think the Brighton game was probably his best game, considering he scored the goal. Although he also was kind of responsible for Brighton's first goal, but we'll sidestep that. I think Gaitán is going to have to play a somewhat important role. He's not going to start. I think he knows that. But when he has opportunities, he has to take them. Because last season, it kind of started early for him. He got opportunities in August and September and didn't run with them. And that kind of set the stage for the whole season.
Yeah, I think so. He can't complain about not being given opportunities last season. He was given plenty. And yeah, he just didn't make the most of them when he was given them. And yeah, when he played well, he played really well, but that was just a bit too infrequent. And yeah, like you say, he's gonna have to turn in some good performances when Simeone rotates in the first half of this campaign. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does this year.
Yep, he's a big question mark. And when we start our season preview podcasts next week, we're gonna talk about him and pretty much everyone else in depth before the season starts. I'm so excited. I'm so excited that La Liga is coming back. I'm very excited. What else from the Brighton game? Lucas scored the winner. That was awesome. I believe that is his first goal or his second goal for Atletico.
Yeah, that was an unusual match winner, but
yeah,
that can only be a good thing, because, I mean, I think he's played well through pre-season, not in any sort of goal-scoring term, but you know, he's done his defensive jobs really well. But I think by scoring the winner, that's just going to act as a sort of underline, maybe for him, from a personal point of view, that's going to just boost his confidence even further when it comes to evaluating how he's played defensively. And, you know, no one's going to expect Lucas to score any goals this season. But if it makes him, if it increases his confidence and he keeps performing well defensively, then I think everybody's going to be happy. So yeah, it was nice for him to score that goal, but yeah, just a sort of a underlining of how well he's played all preseason.
It was kind of a look what I found goal, because the ball came in, yeah. It pinged about like 3 or 4 times, and then Lucas said, oh, look what I found, and he just rifles it into the goal. So it was one of those, but kind of a fitting end to what was a kind of weird game. But, you know, Atleti have not lost this preseason. That's 2 wins and 2 draws with 2 games to go against Getafe and Leganes. Those are the final 2 friendlies this week. And then the season starts, and we're all very much looking forward to that. Anything else from the Brighton game?
No, I think we've covered that one. Yeah, like we said, it was a good bit of fun, 5-goal thriller, and yeah, Atletico showed what they can do going up front, and also a little bit worryingly what they can sometimes let in at the back.
Yeah, just a little bit worryingly though. If this is still happening, it's still happening in October, then we're going to be really pacing back and forth. All right, let's move on to transfer activity. There has been quite a bit in the last few days. Let's start with the one that most surprised me, and that was Matthias Kronwitzer. He's moved on a permanent deal to Zenit. What did you think of this, Ewan? I was really caught off guard by this, especially the timing of it.
Yeah, it all seemed to happen so quickly, and almost what we were saying before about Camero is when you can't sign players this summer, you almost can't sell anyone. And I know he didn't have the best time at Sevilla last year, but, you know, we saw how many injuries Atletico suffered last season, and, you know, add a few injuries in there, a couple of suspensions, and you're gonna wish you had someone like him on the squad. And as much as he might have wanted to move away, you know, start afresh, I'm sure he could have been persuaded to stay until January. So, yeah, this one was a little bit of a surprise for me. But, you know, we see so many of these sort of odd transfers out to Zenit of players who, you know, obviously a lot of money has been dangled in front of them, and they're going to be keen to make the most of that. So, yeah, what surprised me was just how quickly it happened from, you know, getting through his medical and signing on the paper, and now he's gone.
It really, in about 48 hours, it was really kind of fascinating how quickly this took place. And good for him, he's getting paid almost surely, because, you know, Zenit and the top Russian clubs have a lot of money. But I really didn't see the harm in keeping him around until January and just seeing what you have. You're right, everyone is important, especially when you're unable to sign new players. Everyone kind of, their role kind of elevates. And Kronwitzer, you know, he wasn't very good his first, you know, few games at Atletico, but he didn't get a whole lot of chances. He just came in January of 16. Then he moves to Sevilla, and he has a rough time there. And Simeone had apparently already seen all he needed to see out of him and sanctioned his sale. It was a weird one because you need central midfield depth in this team, and young central midfield depth, with Gabby and Augusto both getting up there in age. They're a combined 65 years old. Tomas, Sao, and Koke, who are all, you know, 26 or younger, 25 or younger, that's good. But I think Kronwitzer should have at least been given a chance until January just to see what we have here.
Exactly, especially when, you know, like we say, you can't add anybody and you don't want to lose players. They've already lost Thiago Mendes because he's retired, so that's already one man down in the middle of the park. So to lose another one when you're not adding anybody new, and I know he was sort of a new addition because he was coming back from loan, but I feel like you have to make the most of that. And especially, you know, as much as he didn't have a good time of it in Sevilla, Sevilla were maybe the most different team tactically to Atletico last season, so you don't know how he's going to work when he plays in, you know, the middle of a 4-4-2, because Sevilla so rarely played that last season. So, I mean, like we say, Simeone has clearly seen enough and is fine for him to go, but I just wonder if you could have kept him for, you know, a couple more preseason games and just seen how he does and, you know, partnering Gabby in the middle, because he's never really played that role apart from his few chances when he first joined.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange one. And I know Simeone likes to have a small squad, but this is a weird one. I'm not sure I fully agree with it, but we wish him the best, and we'll see what happens. I'm not sure about this one. I was kind of excited to see him, and he could have played a big role. Obviously, we'll never know just how big a role he could have played. Speaking of players from 2015, who came over in 2015, Rafael Santos Borre also has left Atletico. He has gone back to South America. He's joined River Plate on a 4-year deal, Atletico pocketing just a few million euros for him. But yeah, he was on loan at Villarreal last season, wasn't terribly impressive, and he doesn't appear to be in Simeone's plans. He definitely is not, as he's departed, but he will leave Atletico having never played an official game for the club. So it was a gamble of a signing, and he never really got close to cracking that attack with Griezmann, Correa, Gamero, etc.
Yeah, this one makes a bit more sense, because I think the sort of the bridge to the first team for him was so much larger than it would have been for Canavita. So I think Simeone would have realized that there was really no chance. It would have taken, you know, one of the worst injury crises imaginable for him to be relied upon. So I think it makes a bit more sense for him to be let go, because the position he played, there was just really no chance that he was going to get anywhere near the first team.
Yeah, just it was an uphill battle for him. And at River Plate, he'll get more opportunities. He'll be playing still in a pretty competitive league, and he'll be back in South America. So wish him the best as well. Of the 10 signings that Atletico made in summer 2015, only 5 of them are still at the club. Can you name them?
2015? That would have been Carrasco's year, wouldn't it?
Yep, he's one of them.
Carrasco, okay, right, I get one. That's that's enough. 2015, who else would have been 2015? It was Oblak might have been 2015.
2014.
Oh. 2014. Nope. I'm beat.
I've stumped you. All right. Stefan Savic.
Okay.
In 2015. Vieto, who for now is still here, but that may not last long. And Felipe and Thomas Partey. Thomas was recalled from his loan.
Of course. So not many.
Of the 10 players acquired, only 5 of them are still with the team. And that's not great. It's kind of a dirty little secret about Atletico's recruitment the last couple seasons.
But I think the good thing about the sort of looking back over Atletico's recruitment is that they have some really big hits and, you know, some really big misses. And
they do.
And you would probably, you know, opt for that rather than just a lot of players that sort of work out kind of okay. I mean, you know, looking at Savic and Felipe Luis and Carrasco, these players that have come from that window, like, they've all been, you know, massive successes, and you know, there's still a lot of potential for them this season and next season, and they're not just still at the club, they're going to be starters. So if you could take, you know, out of 10 players, and you've got some that are going to be definitely still starting in a few years, and you're going to have some that you completely miss on, then I think you would take that sometimes.
When Atleti have hit under Simeone, they've been really big hits. Griezmann, Oblak, I think we can consider Carrasco as one of the hits. And I think Carrasco is going to have a really big season anyway, but you can consider him one of those guys. But when they've missed rather spectacularly. And thinking of Cherchi, thinking of Jackson, who was also in the infamous class of 2015.
Yeah.
Jackson, man. I've kind of repressed the memories of Jackson playing for Atletico, because it just wasn't long at all, and he was so bad.
But then the transfer fee he left on the way out, that's still quite nice.
And they still turned a profit on him. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you, Mendes. Thank you. So, one of the theories we saw on our Twitter account, on the Into the Calder on Twitter, is that the timing of these transfers for Canavita and Santos Borre may be linked to a renewed Diego Costa move. And let's talk about the latest on Costa. He has lodged a transfer request with Chelsea, which, still curious that he's doing it this summer instead of last summer, but that's not the point. He has lodged a transfer request with Chelsea. His lawyer said the only club he wants to go to is Atletico. What do you think of the Costa latest? How can Atletico screw this up? Like, it seems like it's a gimme.
I think the only way you can screw it up is if you wait too long, and they're already guilty of that. I mean, I'm almost surprised it hasn't been screwed up already. I mean, you know, we've known for so long that Costa was going to go. It was from that Spain game when he made the announcement that Conte wasn't counting on him, and that's coming up for 60 days ago now, so almost 2 months since that game. I think that was the 11th of June. So almost 2 months since Costa gave the biggest signal you could want that he was going to leave Chelsea this summer, that even said, you know, like, he'd be happy to come back to Atletico. He's made even more explicit statements in saying or signs, you know, dressing up even in the Atletico shirt. He's been as obvious as you could be that he wants to come to Atletico, and it's 2 months later and he's still not been, obviously not, he can't be properly signed, but he's he could be brought in and registered in January, and for that to still not have happened is, the longer it goes on, the more concerning it is, because if it was going to be simple, then he'd have been signed by now. So you just wonder what is holding that up, and you know, if it's a reluctance to pay what Chelsea are asking for, then you have to be really frustrated by that, because whatever Chelsea are asking, surely when you know how good Costa can be, when you know how he would gel with this team, how much he loves playing for this coach, for this coach, then any transfer fee bar something ridiculous in the sort of, you know, plus 50, 60 million range, then anything below that is surely going to be worth it in this market.
Atletico could almost be accused of of not really wanting Costa. I mean, Atleti worked pretty hard for him last summer. In the end, they just didn't want to wait. You could say that was a good decision, a bad decision. This summer, I mean, Costa is doing everything but flying to Madrid and forcing them to draw up a contract. Like, he's doing everything he can to get this done, and Atletico are like, eh, whatever. And I get the waiting game. I get, for a while, I got why they did what they did. They wanted to kind of wait Chelsea out and make them desperate. Chelsea are still paying his wages, and he's on pretty hefty wages. So I'd like to think Chelsea would like to stop doing that at some point, but, you know, that's just me. He's been away for 60 days. He's not training. Well, he's not training very hard. He's basically just chilling in Brazil and waiting for this to get done. And I think it does get done, but nothing's official. And you can't be fully comfortable with the way things are going until it's official. And Atletico's attitude toward this, I mean, I think the one thing the transfer request and the subsequent statement did is it kind of ruled out Milan, that Costa and his entourage have made it very clear that he doesn't want to go anywhere else but Atletico. And I think that is an important point to make. I think that that's important for the rest of this month and how Atletico are going to get this signing done. But you have to get the signing done at some point. I've said for a month plus now, settle at 40 million and call it a day. Okay, Atletico aren't going to pay 50 million. Or 60 million. Chelsea, that's a bit much for a player whose value is pretty low right now. But Atletico also cannot get away with these 25 million, 30 million euro bids that they've submitted so far. Compromise at 40 and call it a day.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only worry is that some other club swoops in, because obviously, you know, he's if he does come, he can't play till January. So I guess there is the view that you can take your time right to the end of the window, because you've got nothing to lose, really. But if some other club swoops in, and the closer to deadline day it gets, the more movement in the market that there is, that, you know, Milan may be still an option, other clubs may be an option if some other strikers move. So anything could happen, and we've seen in this transfer market just how quickly things can happen. So it's just got to be a worry the longer it goes on that some other club decides, okay, well, we'll work out what Chelsea want, convince the player, and off he goes.
Wouldn't it be funny if, as we're talking about this, I see the announcement on my Twitter feed, agreement for the transfer of Diego Costa? That would just be so funny.
Well, I think timing is everything. We'd happily take that to have an out-of-date podcast, but to have Costa coming back, I think that's the deal you'd probably sign up for.
Oh yeah, no question. So Jan Oblak, moving on to Oblak, has been again linked with a move to PSG, who are spending money with reckless abandon this summer. They've already signed Neymar for a world record fee. They want to meet Oblak's release clause of 100 million. Are you nervous about this one?
After what they were able to pay to get Neymar, then you have to be. I mean, you know, 100 million for goalkeepers is still just, you know, it still seems, even in this transfer market with all the inflation of transfer fees, 100 million for goalkeepers still seems that we're a few years away from that. But at the same time, when you look at that PSG squad, I think they're only, or one of the very, very few weak links that they have left is at goalkeeper. So if they see that signing a world-class goalkeeper is, you know, the last thing they need to do to have a squad that can win the Champions League, then the 100 million is not just 100 million for a goalkeeper, it's 100 million to complete your squad, and you could see them paying that. So, yeah, it's got to be a worry, but at the same time, they'd have to convince the player as well. And Oblak seems quite happy at Atletico, but then you you have to wonder how much the money of PSG could change his mind in that regard.
Yeah, hopefully not too much. He's rather important. I mean, no disrespect to Moya, who's pretty good himself, but he's not Jan Oblak, okay? Oblak is one of the five best goalkeepers on the continent. Kind of a big step in quality there. A big step down in quality if he leaves. Atletico are trying to extend his contract, trying to give him a huge pay rise, probably bump his release clause up as well. There have been the reports earlier this summer that a renewal was imminent. Obviously, those never came to pass. And you do wonder if Atletico maybe should have shown a little more urgency there. I don't think Oblak will leave this summer. I think he will be convinced to stay one more year. PSG will probably sign him next year. It'll probably be one of the first things they do is sign him next year. Yeah, hard to see him leaving now with the season just about to start.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think having, you know, been through pre-season and you know, looking ahead to the season just a week or so away with the Ligue 1 already having started, is for a goalkeeper it might be a bit too late to decide, okay, this is the time I want to move.
Yeah, and he has come out and said publicly he wants to stay this summer, so unless PSG are just offering totally like eye-watering wages, which they could, let's not discount that. This is one of the richest clubs in the world here. But unless something drastic changes, I think Atletico are probably going to end up signing him to a renewal, and then he'll likely leave next summer. That still seems to me the most likely course of action here.
Yeah, that sounds a lot more plausible.
Last thing, and on the transfer market. Oh, this was a lot of fun. I wrote up the news piece on this, and I had a lot of fun doing it. Marca reported that Arda Turan, you already know, reported that Arda Turan wants to return to Atletico, as Ernesto Valverde wants to get rid of him. He's just the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he? He has offers from Galatasaray and China, but Marca reported that Arda only wants Atletico. And this 2 years after he slammed Simeone at Atletico for making him run too much, he now wants to come back, allegedly. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Life comes at you fast.
Yeah. It's, I don't really know where Arda Turan's going to end up at the end of this window, but I think my best bet is that he's going to still be at Barcelona and just not on their Champions League squad or anything close to it. I think he's burned so many bridges, especially that incident in Turkey with the journalist.
Yep.
He's basically lowered his value in the market to so low that Barcelona can't even consider it worth selling them for some of the bids that are being reported. I think they were hoping to get about 30 million for him, and that's just not going to happen anymore. And I think, you know, maybe his attitude in the last few years, you know, even saying that he's leaving Atletico Madrid because he doesn't want to run as much. Okay, there might not be that many clubs out there that run as much as Atletico do, but when a player is saying something like that, you have to worry about how committed he's going to be. And it's a shame, because when Turan was great, he was fantastic to watch. And you know, he was just Mr. Cool, and just the way he even strutted out and the pitch before some games, just with a coffee in his hand and, you know, bare feet, just, you know, as cool as you like. And there was just, you know, there was a real Arda Turan, you know, the Arda Turanismo kind of cult. And it's just a shame that he sort of burned so many bridges, annoyed so many people, and just doesn't really have a place to go. But if he does find somewhere to go, it's most certainly not Atletico, I don't think. Yeah, it just baffles me that he thinks that might even be an option.
Yeah, he was a former hero. He could score big goals. His ball control was just outstanding. He was critical to how Simeone played, but Atletico have moved on. I mean, they haven't really missed him. There have been very few times where I've thought to myself, Arda Turan is the only person who can make this better. Like, there are very few times I've thought that, because Atletico have just moved on from him. And there is really no way back for him, especially after his comments a couple years ago, and especially with the incident with the journalist. And you and I are both journalists. Yeah. We both have, I'm sure, very strong thoughts on this. I certainly do. You just don't come after journalists.
Especially a Turkish journalist. I mean, you know, a sort of move back to Galatasaray, that could have really worked. You know, the kid that was a ball boy, all the way up to being the captain of Galatasaray. For him to go back late in his career, that could have been a nice ending. But to do that with a Turkish journalist, I think that is, you know, that's really dented his reputation back home, which until then was, you know, he was still seen as, you know, that something of a hero. He sort of burned his bridges back home in Turkey, and And yeah, like you say, he burned the ones in Madrid quite a while ago. But I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if he moved again and he literally sits out a whole year of his career because he's moved to two clubs that are on transfer bans in the summer that they have transfer bans? That just shows you he's serious when he says he doesn't like running. He just joins the clubs that literally can't play him.
All right, Ewan, what else do you have? Anything at all, anything you want to plug before we go?
Well, in this time next month, looking ahead to the new Atletico Madrid book that's coming out. So Hijacking La Liga, it's definitely one to keep an eye out on, looking at how Atletico went from being relegated to obviously win the league, a couple of Champions League finals. So yeah, I'm excited to see, that's in the final stages now of editing, so excited to see that coming out. And yeah, the only other thing to touch on is, you know, how excited we all are for the start of La Liga. And yeah, look forward to listening to the preview pods that you said are coming out next week.
Yeah, we're starting those next week, and can't wait to read that book. It's going to be a great read, I'm sure.
Cool, thank you.
Yep, can't wait to do that. That'll do it for this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. I'd like to thank my guest, Ewan McTeer.
No problem, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on, man. You can follow Ewan on Twitter at emcteer, it's E-M-C-T-E-A-R. You can follow me on Twitter at jbveren, that's J-B-B-E-R-E-N. Follow Into the Calderon as well, at Into the Calderon, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can also subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colt Gennaro Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. Leave a rating and review on iTunes in particular, really helps us out. And we'll be back next week for the start of the preview pods. It's almost time, folks. Almost time for football to return. Until then, adios.